You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and RadioCafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation strengthens education in northern New Mexico so that learners of all ages can reach their full potential, offering grants that fund public education and community projects, building resilient children, families, and communities through early childhood programs, providing K-12 wraparound services for students and teachers with Inquiry Science as the flagship initiative, investing in students' dreams through scholarships, and creating a solid foundation for learning and systemic change through partnership and advocacy. For program information or to give, visit lanlfoundation.org. I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Chris Smith. He's with Wild Earth Guardians, and Judy Kalman, who is with New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. We're here to talk about bills that affect wildlife and affect our environment that are in the New Mexico legislature at this point. Welcome, Chris and Judy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So advocates for wildlife, advocates for the environment, have kind of been playing defense for the last 8 years when it comes to New Mexico law, the New Mexico legislative sessions. Now, for the first time in a while, there's kind of an opportunity to pass some bills that protect wildlife, especially on public lands. Chris Smith, you're with Wild Earth Guardians. You've been working for a while on the issue of trapping on public lands. What's going on right now? Who's trapping? What are they trapping? What are the problems that you're trying to address this session?
Well, there's a really small subset of New Mexico's population that does commercial and recreational trapping of wildlife on both private and public lands across the state. And they trap for fur and pelts to sell. And occasionally they trap to quote-unquote control carnivores at the request of the livestock industry. You know, along with the immense toll that this activity takes on our native wildlife populations here in New Mexico, some 5,000 plus animals are killed every year by trappers. We also have a number of incidents that harm and even kill people's companion animals, people's dogs, when they're out walking and hiking on public lands. So what we're trying to do is stop recreational and commercial trapping on public lands to keep our native wildlife population safe and healthy, and to keep our public lands where New Mexicans go to find solace, to exercise, to enjoy the outdoors, to keep those lands safe for people and dogs.
Now, we're talking specifically about public lands, right? What are these lands that people are using for trapping? And what are the kind of animals that tend to get trapped?
Trapping occurs on nearly all public lands in New Mexico, with very few exceptions. So trapping is going on Forest Service lands, BLM lands, and state trust lands from the northeast corner to the southwest corner of the state, basically everywhere you can think of. And trappers are targeting bobcats, coyotes, foxes, badgers, skunks, and a few other species.
Skunks?
Yeah, believe it or not, skunks are targeted for their fur and their pelts.
Are people making coats out of all these things, or what's the market for these types of furs?
So furs are typically exported to emergent Asian markets or Russia, yes, to be made into clothing for scarves or coats or hats, that kind of thing.
So it's, in a way, it's a kind of weirdly parallel problem to the poaching issues we see in Africa, where elephants and hippos are concerned, that are also seeing extermination of wildlife for Asian markets.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing to keep in mind is we have these delicate ecosystems here in New Mexico, and the strongholds of those ecosystems are on public lands where there are stronger environmental regulations in place. And so we are essentially taking a public resource, denuding it of its wildlife, the ecosystem architects that live on those lands, and shipping them across the Pacific so that people can wear fur hats and fur scarves.
It's sort of like the way the U.S. was, 100, 150 years ago, where people were wearing, you know, beaver hats and seal coats and things like that.
Yeah, trapping in the Mountain West region is actually contemporaneous with Beethoven. So imagine that we're still doing the same exact thing that we were doing, you know, over 200 years ago. But in that time, we've clearly found ways to keep ourselves warm without having to wear, you know, a coonskin cap, for example.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, the market is different, but the activity is the same, that kind of trapping.
Yeah, I would say that there are subtle differences in that trappers now have technological advantages that they didn't have back then. You know, they use a lot of scent baits and traps are slightly more high tech. And the other major difference, of course, is that our landscapes and our wildlife populations have been relatively devastated in the last couple hundred years. So while during Beethoven's time, at the advent of trapping here in the Mountain West, wildlife populations may have been able to maintain some level of that, at this rate, we just don't have that level of resilience.
So what are the animals that are most, and the animal populations that are most endangered by trapping here in New Mexico?
Well, I can't speak to what species are endangered because the state doesn't have great population data for a lot of these species. I can speak to what species are most frequently targeted. So for example, every year there's around 2,500 foxes killed. There's around 2,000 bobcats killed. There's untold number of coyotes that are killed because those numbers aren't required to be reported. So those are some of the species that we know are being affected by this, but the extent to which they're being affected, we have no idea because we don't have the science to tell us.
And we're going to get into what it might take to get that kind of data flowing here in New Mexico in a moment. But do we have any sense of what the impact is on New Mexico ecosystems of trapping?
We don't. These species are killed without any bag limits. So for $20, you can purchase a fur bearer license and go kill as many bobcats as you're able to during trapping season. The toll that that's taking on our environment is entirely unknown. We don't know how many bobcats are out there. What I will say is that these species are the ecosystem architects of the desert Southwest. They control other animal populations. They prompt healthy plant communities. In the case of beavers, which are trapped recreationally and commercially, they protect our water sources, both in terms of quality and quantity. So the damage to our ecosystems is unknown, but it's certainly going on.
There's also the aspect of cruelty, whether it's a domestic, like a dog who gets trapped, or a bobcat or any other animal. And sometimes the traps are set and then animals land in them that weren't the intended prey for that trap, but they die horrible deaths.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is one of the biggest differences between trapping and hunting per se. You know, before a trapped animal dies or is killed by a trapper, it undergoes an excruciating amount of torture and pain, dehydration, starvation, dislocation, broken bones. Self-amputation is a really common outcome of an animal being caught in a trap. So just the level of cruelty and torture is barbaric, and even a lot of people who see animals as kind of a utilitarian thing, they don't want to see animals go through that process just to, again, put a fur coat on someone in Russia.
So there is a bill in the legislature that people can call their senators or representatives to support or whatever, however, you know, express how they feel about it. So that's one of the issues that is going on right now. Now, another one, and I want to turn to you, Judy. You're with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and you're looking at the New Mexico State Game Commission. First of all, tell us about the history of this commission. How was it set up in the first place? How has it changed over the years?
The New Mexico State Game Commission is a board of 7 members. They're all appointed kind of at will by the governor. It was created a very long time ago, almost 100 years ago, so it's almost as old as the state. And it was a pretty common setup in Western states, and it still is. And so this commission sets wildlife policy for the whole state of New Mexico. So they hire the department head for the Game and Fish Department. They also do things like decide how many cougars can be killed in a single year in the state, They decide whether or not they're going to participate in Endangered Species Act recovery efforts by the federal government, that kind of thing. So it's a pretty powerful commission. It governs what happens to wildlife all over the state. And so right now, all seven of those members are appointed by whatever governor is currently in. The problem that we've seen as animal advocates is that you get these very large swings in policy between administrations. And so at each new administration, the governor typically fires all of the commissioners and replaces them with whoever he or she wants. So you go from people who are quite progressive in their wildlife policy thinking under more liberal governors to very conservative commissions under conservative governors. And that results in real changes in policy on the ground. And so a few years ago, a very large coalition of groups, which included and continues to include sportsmen's organizations and conservation groups and animal protection organizations, all got together because we all realized that this wasn't a good system for anybody. There was no reliability either for the animals or for people who like to watch or use wildlife. So we all got together about 3 years ago to talk about what we could do to address that issue and reduce the pendulum swing that happens between administrations. And so what we came up with was a bill that we actually introduced 2 years ago in the New Mexico State Legislature. We're introducing a pretty much identical, more or less, bill this session, House Bill 263. And what it would do is it would take four of the governor, the current system, it would take four of the appointments away from the governor, and it would give them to Legislative Council, which is a bipartisan group of legislative leadership. And it would also impose specific qualifications on those four people so that you would have to have a scientist on the board, which is not a current requirement. You'd have to have a designated sportsman, you'd have to have a designated conservation representative, and you'd have to have a designated agriculture and ranch representative. And then the other three appointments would remain in the governor's office. There would be some geographic distribution requirements by congressional district, but the governor would still basically get their pick of three. So we just think that this is a good way of sort of reducing that pendulum swing. The other things in the bill are that it prevents members of the commission from being removed at will, so they would have to be removed for cause. This is a good way, we think, to prevent retaliatory removal of commissioners when they aren't doing things that the governor wants.
So would those commissioners have a term that had nothing to do with who was in office in the governor's office?
So we did change the terms a little bit so that they would be staggered, so that, yeah, they wouldn't all be turned over right at the administration. So they would sort of be, after the first couple of cycles, a few of them would end up being turned over every 2 years.
How long is their term now?
Their term now is as long as the governor wants to keep them.
Oh, okay.
Much. So this would impose some term limits, and then it would also, like I said, sort of stagger them so that not all of the commissions would be replaced in any given time. A couple of them would be replaced every few years, but the terms would be staggered so that there was more overlap across administrations.
How do you anticipate that its passage, if this bill gets passed this session, would help or affect New Mexico wildlife?
Well, I think for us at the Wilderness Alliance, it's super important to have a designated scientist on the commission. That's one thing that has been seriously lacking. This commission is making decisions about wildlife in the state, and Chris alluded to this earlier. We don't have a ton of good data, but when we do have data, it's important to have somebody on the commission who knows how to evaluate it and look at it, and that hasn't been present. So that's a really important one to us that I think will bring much more legitimacy to the commission's decisions. I also just think that depoliticizing the commission a little bit, which this doesn't do entirely, but it does more than the current situation, that in itself would create more balanced decisions because you're not facing fear of removal by a governor who's unhappy. The commission would be able to make decisions that it really thought was right more than they can do now, I think. And because the commission would change more slowly and it probably wouldn't change as much because some of the members would be appointed by a bipartisan group of legislators, I just think it would lead to more careful and balanced decisions about wildlife.
Yeah, I would add that one of the really exciting things that this bill does is it tightens up the language for the conservation representative So, for example, during the Martinez administration, we had a person who was supposed to be representing conservation interests who was an oil and gas attorney and a member of a trophy hunting group. And those were her credentials as a conservationist. And this bill really changes that. So you have to have actual conservation bona fides to serve in that position.
You're listening to the Radio Cafe. We're going to take a quick break. Please stay with us. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation supports education along the cradle to career spectrum by investing in Northern New Mexico school districts, nonprofit education programs, and community projects. Education and community grants of up to $2,500 are available to qualified education programs that serve the counties of Los Alamos, Mora, Rio Arriba, San Miguel, Sandoval, Santa Fe, or Taos. 2019 grant application deadlines are February 15th and August 15th. For more information or to apply, visit lanlfoundation.org/grants. That's lanlfoundation.org/grants. And now back to our program. One of the things that you were talking about a moment ago, Chris, and this is a question for both of you, is that there's so much about what's happening in New Mexico wilderness areas or public lands that we don't know. We don't know how many animals are being trapped or what kinds of animals. We don't know how this is affecting ecosystems. What do you think needs to happen in order for us to have really more data, more knowledge on which to base sound policy?
You know, there's actually a couple other bills at the legislature right now that would involve better data collection. There's a corridors bill currently, Senate Bill 228 is a corridors study bill that would actually study migration corridors in the state and write reports about what those migration corridors look like, because we don't always know like where wildlife is traveling through the state and where they're having trouble getting through their normal migration routes. So that bill is something that I think would really help. I think the department itself, if it was a little bit better funded or wanted to, could probably do some other data collection.
Which department are we talking about?
The Game and Fish Department. But yeah, and I mean, the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance also often does citizen science outings. I don't know that that's a huge component of how the agencies monitor their stuff, but we often do a lot of data collection, specifically in federal public lands, but we do some on state lands too, where we take volunteers out and do inventory reports for things like wilderness characteristics, but we also look at tracks and take pictures of things like that, and we give all that data to the agencies. So I'm sure there are other like citizen science projects that are going on like that that are probably helping with data collection, but I know we need a lot more.
Yeah, I think something that would really help us in terms of having the data and the science to make sound policy decisions around our wildlife management is if the Department of Game and Fish used more of their resources collecting that data and doing that good science. Currently, we have a department that spends a lot of its resources recruiting and retaining what they see as their constituents, which are primarily hunters and anglers. And while those folks certainly have an important role to play in terms of wildlife management, the department needs to diversify who they see as their constituents. Most New Mexicans enjoy the outdoors for other reasons, whether that's camping or hiking or wildlife viewing or any number of other activities that aren't considered consumptive. And yet we have a department that spends the vast majority of its resources catering to those folks rather than spending some of those resources doing the science, collecting the data in order to do ecosystem management in a scientifically sound manner.
Would reconstituting the Game Commission affect what you're talking about, Chris? I mean, the Game Commission directs the Department of Game and Fish, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, I think it would. The extent to which that will happen is unclear. It depends on who is appointed to the Game Commission. But this bill would allow for people who want to see that kind of progressive, broadening vision of the department to be appointed and to take leadership positions on the commission.
Interesting. Judy, you sort of alluded a moment ago to some of the problems that have come up in the past in the Game and Fish Commission. What specifically are you talking about?
Yeah, so with us, with the Wilderness Alliance, we work a lot, for example, on Mexican wolf recovery down in Gila. And Mexican wolves are protected under the Federal Endangered Species Act, and so they're managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. But that said, under the Endangered Species Act, there's a way for states to really participate in wolf recovery and help the federal government with Endangered Species Act requirements. And to do that, the state often receives funds, and then they're a partner with the federal organization. You know, it allows the state to really be a partner in recovery. And under the Richardson administration, the commission had joined the Mexican Wolf Recovery Program as a cooperating partner, and they were very enthusiastic about supporting wolf recovery, and they helped in that effort. Under the commission, under the Martinez administration, she directed the commission to actually pull out of the Mexican Wolf Recovery Program, and so the state was no longer a participating state partner. And then even further than that, she was very explicit in her opposition to having wolves in the state of New Mexico, and we saw the commission take a number of actions to actually thwart wolf recovery in the state of New Mexico. And so they were trying to pass things at the commission level that would actually stop the federal government from even implementing the federal wolf recovery program. And so that actually reached the point of litigation between the commission and the feds. And that's the kind of thing where if you have a commission that's totally politicized solely under a governor that has a view about a wildlife issue, it can actually have quite detrimental impacts to wildlife. During those years when the commission was fighting the federal government over wolf recovery, we didn't see any, for example, adult wolf releases into the state. And so the feds were really limited in what they could do for wolf recovery because so much of that was tied up in litigation and in delays and stuff like that. And so that's kind of an issue where we really saw as an organization the need for reforming the structure of that commission, because it just doesn't work, you know, to have during one governor's administration, the state be all in for something like wolf recovery, and in the next administration for them to pull out. You know, wolf recovery is a thing that's going to take decades. And so you can't have this like flip-flop, especially when there are so few wolves here.
So is Governor Lujan Grisham going to appoint a whole new game commission, or is she going to wait until we see if this bill is passed in order to, if it does pass, meet the provisions of the new law?
Yeah, so we don't really know. She has indicated support for this bill on the campaign trail. It would, you know, if she signs it, it would take away some of her own power to replace commissioners. But she's willing to do that, I think, because she realized that it was necessary. But, you know, on the day that she took office, she certainly had the ability to replace the commissioners.
And hasn't done so yet.
Not to my knowledge, no.
So we will see, and we will be following this. Let's turn to another issue. Chris Smith, you are also supporting a bill that would ban wildlife killing contests. Now, new land commissioner for New Mexico, Stephanie Garcia Richard, just made an executive order banning these contests on some state lands. Albuquerque Mayor Tim Keller signed a resolution condemning them. There's also a law in the legislature, so a lot of movement on wildlife killing contests. What are these contests in the first place?
Well, first I want to take a moment to thank Land Commissioner Garcia Richard for her leadership on the issue. By prohibiting wildlife killing contests on state lands, she's really exemplifying the leadership that I hope our other elected officials follow. So these are essentially contests for which contestants are given prizes, often cash or firearms, for killing the most coyotes or the largest coyote or the smallest and often the youngest coyote. And these are not uncommon in New Mexico and actually throughout the West. We estimate that there's about 30 of these that take place in New Mexico every year. And so what this bill would do is it would prohibit coyote killing contests throughout the state, not just on state trust lands.
Is it coyote specific or all wildlife killing contests?
This bill is specific to coyotes. Land Commissioner Garcia Richard's executive order prohibits all wildlife killing contests of coyotes and other unprotected species on state trust lands. And if you think about it, I mean, this is one of the most archaic, barbaric, senseless acts that we continue to do as a society, I think. I mean, people literally go out there with automated calling machines that bring coyotes to them, and then they essentially slaughter them for fun. and are rewarded for this. And so this bill, while we can't right now prohibit the killing of coyotes because they're a totally unprotected species in the state, we can at least prohibit contests, prohibit incentives, prohibit prizes for these kinds of barbaric acts.
Coyotes are a very resilient species. They're kind of like the opposite of endangered species or species that live in a very specific niche. Coyotes can live anywhere, and they do. They live in cities. They live in all kinds of ecosystems. What is their place in the ecosystem? And what happens if we know, because this whole question of what we do and don't know is, as you've been saying, but what is their place in the ecosystem? What happens when 100 or I don't know how many coyotes are killed in these contests, but when they're killed?
So the first part of the question, coyotes are key carnivores in the West, and especially the desert Southwest. I mean, they're a key role player in trophic cascades, basically food chains that control the populations of all the species, both beneath them in the food chain and above them in the food chain. And that, again, impacts the type of plant life that we have, because if you wipe out a coyote population, then, for example, the rabbit population balloons. And when the rabbit population balloons, those rabbits eat more plants. And when the plant population is decreased, then our water resources are affected. So, again, we see these big, long chain reactions of consequences on our ecosystems when we carry out these kind of things. In terms of the actual effect on coyote populations when you kill them indiscriminately, it's really interesting. I think there's things that we need to take away from this. The first is that coyotes are social animals and they live in fairly rigid structures. And so when you indiscriminately kill them, you risk disrupting that pack structure. And actually, coyotes are shown to breed more when, for example, the breeding pair is killed. So you're not actually controlling the coyote population, and in fact, you could be ballooning that population.
So wait a minute. If you've got a group of coyotes and some of them are killed, then the other ones will breed more or have more litters?
Yeah, it's possible that that happens. It's called compensatory breeding. So when the population is damaged, coyotes will work hard to regain that population. And especially if you kill, you know, the breeding male or the breeding female, you leave a bunch of more juvenile coyotes to not only start to breed, but start to take ownership of that pack structure and start to behave in ways that are even more problematic to humans. The second thing is, regardless of the population impact, I think what these contests do is they show one of the darkest sides of humanity. I mean, this is, again, we're not having a real beneficial impact on coyote populations in any way with these contests. And so what we're showing to kids especially, I think, is that you can kill life forms because it pleases you. And I think that that's immensely problematic.
I think one of the things that's so tricky in our modern world is that we did evolve hunting. We come from hunter-gatherers. And there is a kind of hunting, and I've just been reading in preparation for a conversation with author Wade Davis, who's going to be in Santa Fe soon, who has studied many Aboriginal Indigenous people all over the world. In so many of those cultures that are still existent, hunting goes along with reverence and ritual that accompanies the taking of a life. And that seems like something that's been lost. Not that hunting is in itself a bad thing necessarily. I mean, we're one of many animals that does hunting. But to do it without that consciousness seems to me to be really almost a departure from our own natures. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Actually, both in New Mexico and across the West, and maybe even across the nation, we've seen sportsmen groups come out opposed to this kind of activity because, you know, in reality, this isn't hunting. There isn't a fair chase ethic involved. It's not done to feed one's family. It's not done for subsistence. And, you know, it has no respect and reverence or kind of understanding of ecosystems and the landscape and the animals. So even to tie this kind of act to the concept of hunting, I think, is doing a disservice to hunting.
Right, right. Have you ever been to one of those contests yourself?
I have not, often these are somewhat secretive groups that carry them out. And that's not to say that they don't advertise and entice people to participate, but you know, they're certainly not taking out ads in the local paper. They have private Facebook groups, or they have, you know, flyers in places where only their supporters would happen to go. I have not participated. A number of groups have managed to get footage of these contests and collect interviews from participants, and needless to say, it's a pretty gruesome activity.
So we've talked about the Game Commission, we've talked about wildlife killing contests and trapping on public lands. Are there any other bills that either one of you is following, or your groups, in the New Mexico legislative session?
Yeah, so our group is spearheading an effort to pass what we're calling the Environmental Review Act, which is House Bill 206. It had its first committee hearing yesterday. And this would create similar requirements to the National Environmental Policy Act, but at the state level. So right now, when federal agencies are doing projects that might significantly impact the environment, they have to do some environmental analysis and involve the public before making decisions. We don't have a similar state law that requires that for state agencies. 16 other states do, but New Mexico does not. And so that's a real gap here, especially when we have these checkerboard areas where we have these little pieces of state land that are surrounded by federal land. No environmental analysis has to happen on those lands for the most part. And so this would sort of create uniform requirements for public input and environmental analysis, no matter what the land jurisdiction is.
So it would basically bring state law up to federal law and to be the same as, so that adjacent lands or state lands are treated as federal lands are treated in terms of environmental requirements.
Yeah, the state law that we're pushing is a little bit less comprehensive than the federal NEPA law, and so it wouldn't require quite as much, but it would certainly require the same kinds of things. So it would require notice that the project's happening. I mean, the public isn't even required to be notified about projects happening on state lands right now. So, for example, when the state land office does a lease sale for oil and gas development or something like that, and they're going to lease off some parcels of state land, they don't have to look at the groundwater implications. They don't have to tell the public where they're leasing. They don't have to look at endangered species. So this would require that the public's notified, that they look at some of those things. And it's, you know, it's just common sense to sort of make smart decisions in advance. We've seen a lot of things over the last few years, like the Carlsbad brine well, where, you know, there's a project that just wasn't cited in a great place, and it's resulted in a $50 million price tag for the state. And so that's the kind of thing that we want to avoid more of.
There's also a bill that would affect the trafficking of what, ivory? There's some kind of trafficking bill.
The trafficking bill is Senate Bill 38. It's actually part of the Rocket Docket, which means that it's one of the bills that had passed the legislature unanimously, or almost unanimously, during the Martinez administration, but she vetoed it. So that means that it was fast-tracked for this year. So I don't know tons about that bill, but my understanding is that it would prevent animal parts from animals that are listed on the CITES International Treaty from being imported into New Mexico, and it would actually create a criminal penalty for that.
Anything else that either one of you wants to let us know about? And how can listeners participate in the legislative process?
I think a lot of New Mexicans, especially over the last decade or so, have felt alienated from the legislative process, and it can be intimidating. I think it's really important that citizens participate in this. It literally is our chance to enact the laws we want to see. So what I would call on is for New Mexicans to call or email or have coffee with your state representative and your state senator. The Wildlife Protection and Public Safety Act, which would prohibit recreational and commercial trapping, is a really, really big priority of ours. If and when you talk to your state rep and your state senator, ask them to support Roxy's Law. We're calling it that on behalf of a dog who was strangled in a snare trap on public lands last November. You would be surprised how much your voice as a constituent carries weight in the Capitol when your legislator goes to vote on an issue.
Yeah, it's a small state and not everybody participates, and so those who do really do have a voice.
I have a story about that just to underscore what Chris just said. A couple of sessions ago, we were trying to kill a bad bill that was up in committee, and we did some targeted phone calls to the legislators on that committee from their constituents. And during the committee hearing, one senator specifically said that she got about 100 phone calls on this bill, and that was the most phone calls she had ever gotten ever about a bill. And she actually pulled it from committee, and it died right there.
Very interesting.
The bill sponsor. So, I mean, 100 calls, that's like not a lot. So it tells you how few calls they get from constituents if 100 is like shocking to them. So I think it is true that even just a few phone calls from their constituents makes a huge difference to them on a bill.
Yeah, and not to go overboard on this issue, but I think we're inundated with fairly abstract, though important, national politics right now. You know, often that's coming to folks in the form of, you know, national news headlines, and New Mexicans may be startled to know that their state representative would be happy to have a coffee with them and talk about them in terms of what's important in their day-to-day life, and that is much more impactful than ranting on Facebook about the government shutdown, for example.
For example, Chris Smith is with Wild Earth Guardians. They're at wildearthguardians.org, and there's another website about the trapping issue, trapfreenm.org. Judy Kalman is with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and they are on the web at nmwild.org. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.